You know we gotta go that way, Joshua. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. This is Tadatus coming in on the ones and twos with Space Toast. You got Nick and Josh taking a dump and thinking about shit.
Getting the groove here, buddy. They were getting the groove. Podcast spin them out like I don't know, whatever. Spin them out like, yeah. Anyways,
spinning them out not like the smoothness of that phrase.
I haven't even had one drink yet. I'm already stumbling through my words. It's been a fun night.
Cheers. We're about two sips into our old fashioned here, and Joshua is already, you know, fat tongue in it.
What are you gonna do? Welcome to Tadatus. Taking a dump and thinking about shit. The podcast
that solves all the world's problems whilst taking a poo.
Taking a poo. I love it.
Oh, so tonight we got the Astros on. We got the Rockets coming on.
Yeah, let's hop into it.
Shout out to this. Listen, Mr. Rob Riggle sends me a text this afternoon and says, hey, got tickets to the Astro Suites tonight. I said, awesome. Are you taking me with you? He's like, well, yeah, if Chrissy didn't want to go, but she wants to go.
What is that all about?
Yeah, I'm like, well, thanks so much.
Hey, man, guess what I'm doing tonight?
And then, he sends pictures.
I got courtside tickets.
Pictures of the inside suite, you know, with all the food and all the booze. He's like, all the food and all the liquor's free, too. I'm like, that's what the suites are about, bro.
Rubbing it in? Way to go.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And they're winning. They're playing pretty well.
With friends like that, who needs enemies, right?
Gusto was a pitcher today. He had some gusto. It was pretty good outing for him. The bats are starting to get alive. The Astros are starting to look pretty good, my man.
They are. Listen, there's what's his butt? Christian Walker finally woke up the other night.
Yeah, no, man. That's kind of exciting to see him get going a little bit. I know he got a double and a couple RBIs. Yeah, I think that's probably, we talked about last time, that's probably the biggest disappointment so far. If he gets going, Yonner Diaz, he's starting to get going. Thank goodness the Blue Jays are in town. They're kind of getting the Astros' bats hot. Pitching's been pretty darn good. Hunter Brown, by the way, man, that guy is pitching.
Well, he's a man on fire, baby. Hunter Brown.
Yeah, Cy Young. I mean, it's early, but Cy Young type performances so far.
A lot of tight 97, 98, 99, 100 mile an hour fastballs. They're two seamers, four seamers, riding in, cutting out. It's been some fucking beautiful art from that young man.
He's really pitching like a stud, like an ace. I got a stat up here right now. Quality starts in 2025. Hunter Brown 5. Marlins have 4. Yankees have 4. Guardians have 3. So on the entire Yankees
roster
season this year, only 4 quality starts and right, 5 yeah, of them for Hunter Brown. He is pitching lights out. I don't have stats for him, but he's been rock solid. The Astros through 23 games and they're winning today. 12-11.
Yeah, they could make it a run here.
You see this stat right here. It's the same record they had 4 of the last 5 seasons. They've been 12-11 after 23 games. 7-16 last year. One of those years, 2022, 12-11. That's a bit the anomaly there because I think they won a World Series that year. That being said, you know, how they kind of start off last year and what a dud it was. And this year, you know, high hopes and just kind of didn't quite get out of the gates hot. They've started to get going a little bit. And, you know, frankly, I'm excited about them again. I think that you know, this team's set up and they've got pitching. Right? I think that's
And I was listening today this afternoon. I forget which sports talk, but anyways, doesn't matter. They were talking about, obviously, with getting, you know, we're close to getting McCullers and getting, what's his name, Cha-Cha. Luis Garcia.
Yeah, I think he's a little further away, but McCullers is like maybe
McCullers,
the next
Garcia, and then there's one more, and actually getting Forrest Whitley up and, you know, him.
Yeah, he pitched a couple of innings the other day. Yeah. That's nice to see.
We're adding on all kinds
of
stuff.
Josh Hader has been really good. I mean, since that first game.
He's sub one. He's .7, .6, something like that over his ERA now.
I thought the pitching would be good going into the season, and I think we're kind of seeing that early on. The pitching's been really, really solid. Bullpen pitching.
What's been crazy and great is that thus far the weakest link is Framber Valdez, who was absolute nails last year. You know,
he's also on a contract year. That's something to kind of.
And by that weakest link, he's still been pretty damn good.
Yeah, so. I mean he's been just less Framber, like I guess in a lot of ways. But yeah, he's on a contract year, so that's interesting to see. That somebody was speculating he might be trade bait. And if McCullers is healthy, I don't know. I hate to kind of say that, but the concept would be you're looking at a big time bat, and if you feel like those other guys are kind of filling in. Who knows?
Who knows? I still have, you know, love in my heart for old Sassy Lance, and it's been unfortunate how long he's been unavailable, and I am rooting for him. Also, I'm not above, like, if he was able to garner us some sort of, like you said, big bat. I mean,
yeah, there's an element of, like, anything he contributes this year is going to be a bonus.
Yeah, fair. I like that.
All
So the win right now, the Rockets are getting ready to start. Game one against the Warriors, they lost. They're down 1-0 in the series here, but that's all good.
Not only did they lose, they looked really like outmatched for most of the game. They made a run in the third quarter, but they put themselves in a bad situation to have to make that run. I think Jalen Green only scored 2 points in the game. This is just a really offensively dismal game from a guys some guys you really expect to contribute. You know, that being said, I'm not too worried about them moving forward. You know, that being said, you got to win some games. I don't know if it's a must-win tonight in the grand scheme of things, but it feels really must-winny tonight. Game two.
Sure. Listen, it's this team. I thought what I saw the other night was, they were the living embodiment of the last two seasons of this team, where they let themselves get into a hole, and then athletic ability, heart, and just will. They fight their way all the way right back into it.
Yeah, that's.
And if you had not done the first, you know, get down by 20, when they've avoided getting down by 20 and played, you know, tooth and nail the whole way through, then they blow people out. So it's in them. It's just a matter of inexperience, right?
Yeah. To me, it's like inexperience. It feels like you know, a lot of these guys haven't really done this a whole lot, especially the young guys in this team. You know what I mean? Jalen Green being like the biggest one, really, really first playoff game, really big dud. That being said, Alperen Şengün had a really good.
Alperen's a beast, dude. So, Amen Thompson's gonna have to do his thing.
Yeah.
And if you remember before the series started, though, Josh, we talked and they did showed up there again, and the other night it was exactly that. My one main and only concern, like, in this series, isn't always Steph Curry. Like, it's just unfair.
Yeah, but you saw that stat just now. 85 points in the first game. Like, that's the fewest they've scored all season.
Yeah, that's not going to win.
You just can't, right? And so, Golden State's, it's a veteran team. They've got a lot of talent there. The coach has been there a long, long time.
Yeah.
And so you expect them to kind of be prepared for that, but you can't throw up a dud offensively against a team.
No, absolutely
like that.
Not. 85 points only wins during the 80s.
Yeah,
and 90s.
I think the team bounces back big time today, and they win this game. You know, again, it's a must win ish kind of feeling.
Sure,
but I do think they pull it out.
I'm excited for it. I have no reason to think that was their best. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
All right,
super duper excited.
You know, I guess it slipped my mind that Jimmy Butler played for this team as well. Not that he played for the team, but like. Watching him in the fourth quarter.
Oh, Jimmy Buskets, yeah.
Yeah, I think the announcer said it, and this kind of what struck me was like you got two closers on the floor with him and Steph, and it's like, you know, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
That's in the heyday of the Rockets, this last generation with James Harden, it just seemed like that was the only guy on the court that in crunch time you didn't trust with the ball, and that limited the Rockets, and you know they came down to like Harden ball where it just dribble out. Having two guys on your team that can close out, that they can take pressure off of the other one, you can't focus solely on one. You know, that's a huge benefit to Golden State in that crunch time. Veteran guys that have that experience being in that moment.
Every bit of that, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, you know, I think again, Rockets bounce back. I think more well-rounded team. They proved it all season long.
So, what I would say to this is not debating back and forth, but just don't look past. The Rockets team is young as itself, but look, Fred VanVleet and
Dylan
Brooks, both are world champions.
Right. Yeah, and I know they're not void of any kind of. Veteran playoff experience. I just mean that, like, the core of their team is really
young. No, absolutely. I'm agreeing with that. I'm just saying that there's it's not just the veteran presence and or experience, because this team has that too. I think that's also why the Rockets are number two seed. I mean, leadership. It's just a matter of the actual stardom, if you will. Like Jalen Green, VanVleet.
Yeah,
he could be a guy who take a shot at the end of the game for closer, but he's not the closer that by comparison to Steph Curry enough to dismiss anything.
But he's a guy you need to make shots throughout the game. You know, when he's in the rotation or in the offense, but he threw up a dud too. And
sure.
Like 2 of 10 or something like that from downtown. That's just not good enough.
No.
As we're watching now, another turnover.
The Rockets need to play better defense tonight.
Golden State is the best team in the league, scoring points off of turnovers, and the Rockets turned the ball over a ton last game.
Yeah.
So lots of that went really, really bad last game, and, you know, turned around, Rockets, turned around. I don't know, man. Anything else on the Rockets?
Staying with basketball for just a minute, dude.
Have you watched any of the other games?
That's what I was going to say. The party I had yesterday at work, the six tops, I was having a blast. They were also really interested in that Memphis-Oklahoma City game. And if you recall, Oklahoma City game one beat Memphis by 51. I don't know what the final score was yesterday, but I know it got up to over 20, and Oklahoma City is up 2-0 on that one. Oklahoma City has looked ridiculously good.
Yep.
And I'm glad the Rockets have a winning record against them on the season, but that means jack fucking shit in the playoffs.
Got to
get to them first, but yeah.
Yeah, true. I got to take a lot of Los Angeles dropping their first game. They won again. They won yesterday. That, you know, I don't really pay attention to all these other games in the playoffs. I'm just so tuned out of
by LA, you mean the crying LeBrons?
Yeah. Crying LeBrons. Oh, man, I can't remember the exact quote. I heard someone talk about him the other day. It was just,
We were talking the other day about the difference in sports era time. Actually, maybe again, it wasn't with you. That at some point, really the question is, when did we start counting how many times a guy made it to a finals, made it to a championship? Not the titles, but how many times he's been there.
Yeah, that's
how that's so much more important now because of LeBron.
That's exactly the argument somebody's making. It's like, we don't give him enough credits. He's been there a bunch of times. And it's like, I don't know, man. When did that become the criteria for greatness? Is like, you got to play in that championship a bunch of times. To me, that's
but you
so,
lost yeah, all the time.
I don't know. We're lucky we got to witness Michael Jordan.
Oh, we've seen the greatest of the greatest.
You know,
and keeps going.
There was some greatness before that. Bill Russell was great. Like, but
Oh no, that's not dismissing any of that. Again, it's
being you know, like to use some of your words, being present in the most critical moments in these games is what we define greatness. And all too often, LeBron James seems to fade. I understand it's a team game, and you know, there's only one of five players, and yada yada yada. But just you know. I'm not going to hold any kind of like, you get no credit for me for being the guy who just went there a bunch.
Listen, it's simply as this. Brady went to 10 Super Bowls and he won 7. If he'd only won 3, then the argument of him being the GOAT, it dies.
I mean,
never gets past
a choke
Montana.
Level in that conversation, right?
It's and like, that's, man, by the way, the other side is the numbers LeBron has in the NBA Finals. So actually, he's 4-10, but still, it's the point being. Of the 6 losses, he's been swept twice, too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm nostalgic, of course, and, you know, I don't even watch basketball now, and so the game has kind of, like, gotten away from me with regard to, like, you know, how I can analyze it, and, you know, I don't... It's a different genre, and, you know, it's like, you know, when your dad said, that music sucks now. It's like, it's true.
Sure.
Just like we say our kids, you know, it's just, well, what does that mean? It's like, well, because it's not my music, right? And so LeBron James is not my greatest of all time. I just feel sad for this generation that you know, they didn't get to witness Michael in the element that he is that is so different than LeBron James.
Fair.
Specifically in those championship moments.
No, absolutely. The other thing I said, it's another one that we've been blessed to witness, and I say it over again and over. Steph Curry is the greatest three-point shooter that's ever played basketball, period, hands down. I don't know of any player at all, first of all. I know nobody's made more during regular season or playoffs. Highest percentage made career also. That being said, like his numbers, you could look at them all from the entire floor. The fact that he shoots 42% from half court, it tells you over and over that this is not—it's not an accident. This is on purpose. This is also why he's a career 92% free throw shooter. That's not an accident.
Right.
You fucking work on that obsessively. That's why he knows. You see him take a shot. He knows when he misses, and he knows. When those ones that are from fucking half a mile that are just money.
Yeah, I hate to take any credit away from like just how great that is, but there is an argument that element of basketball has changed it. And a lot of people argue for the worse, right? There is no like low post, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon.
Sure, neither one's wrong.
He'd be a stretch four, you know, in a way that. Yeah, he could fit, but, like, you know, you wouldn't get the greatness of Hakeem Olajuwon. The guy's, you know, I forget where he is on blocks, but he's so far ahead of blocks that like, it is...
You're talking about Olajuwon?
Yeah, Olajuwon.
Olajuwon to Mutombo is 700 blocks difference.
Yeah, and there's no way playing that's even, like... They couldn't play for 30 more years on average.
Yeah, Olajuwon 38, 31, Mutombo's 3,100 change.
Yeah, it's one of those safe records, but... That was a different type of game. And, again, nostalgically driven. I prefer that kind of inside out, banging down low. You know,
versus we bombing away from outside?
Yeah, we got to see Olajuwon at his greatest. You know, one of the greatest big man with footwork. Or greatest footwork on a big man maybe ever in the game. And, you know, like we'll never get to see that again, right? We'll never get to witness that just because the game is – oh, I say never, but the way the game is evolving now, you know, that's just kind of lost in the – you know, in the how the game's played now.
Well, and it's simple. Yes, I agree, and I would say my logic as to why the game has changed because it's so much more analytic driven, right? It's the understanding that 3 will always beat 2, and so that's why the mid range game is basically erased. It's either take a 3-pointer or shoot from in the paint. We want either paint points or dunks, layups or dunks or 3-pointers, because the mid range 2 is no more useful than if we're gonna go for 2, go in tight for 2.
Yeah,
and again, 3 is always better than 2. So that. Understanding analytic depth. That's why the game has evolved as far as that. But we want the high scoring.
Yeah, that's
because I don't think what we want now, and just for me, you, but definitely not the kids today. They don't want a fucking 85-84 game.
Yeah, and that Dan Tony drove a lot of that analytics with how to look at an offense. They have a math equation on how many shots you get up times how good your shooters are, and a race to a certain point number, which equaled wins in all these different variables. Right.
Right. It was always a race to 100.
Yeah, it was kind of a Moneyball situation. I kind of want to transition back to baseball for a second.
That's fine.
I thought of Moneyball, and we didn't talk about this a second ago, but you and I were looking at briefly, and something I'm curious about. I think I mentioned this on the podcast as well, and that's I'm tracking Bregman and Isaac Paredes.
Yeah, their stats, you're going to track all their stats all year long.
That was the replacement for that position, and. You know, when you look at, I wanted to break down the stats to kind of evaluate like what would have cost Bregman. Well, basically, let me just kind of break it down like this. Bregman has better stats. There's no doubt about it. He's a 1.3 WAR, right?
Wins against replacements. Yep.
Isaac Paredes is at a 1. 20 hits for Isaac, 29 for Bregman, so a little bit better. 4 home runs for each. Batting average of .302 for
Bregman.
Bregman
also has 10 more at bats. He has 10 more at bats and 9 more hits, right?
Right. So that's 10 more hits.
Yeah, that's pretty good, though.
They are elevated stats. I'm not denouncing that. But we looked also at the contracts, right? Bregman's going to make $40 million this year. Isaac Paredes is going to make $6 million. So I told this story today at work, and someone was like, yeah, it sounds like Moneyball. And I was like, oh, that's a funny way. Like, you know, call up, because that is kind of it. It's a really good baseball move. And, you know, if you think about the concept of that $34 million or $33 million that isn't going to Isaac Paredes, if you could use that, allocate it somewhere else on the baseball field to improve a position you need, you know, a better improvement, that to me is the smart move. And what's really interesting about, I guess, I'll tell this kind of interesting story about Moneyball, because, I don't know, I told it earlier, so I'll tell it again. But, When I was at Good Company the first time around, I had a meeting at Minute Maid Park, and I just read the book Moneyball, right?
I was
super into this concept.
And this is that meeting y'all did across the way at like Union Station, looking in.
Well,
right?
No, we did a happy hour on top of Union Station,
but we
actually met inside the conference rooms inside the stadium, and so they actually had a guest speaker, and that was their sabermetrician, their Moneyball guy came out, and I've just read the book, and so I'm like super nerding out.
I just love that you called him what his actual proper title, sabermetrician. I love it.
Thank you. That was a great trip. Hold on one second.
It sounded sexy and provocative.
Yeah, so I forget the guy's name. I should probably remember his name. So, you know, here I read the book. I don't even know if the movie had come out yet. I was inside baseball, if you will, with the book. Talked to the sabermetricians. That was the coolest experience for me in that moment, right? Fast forward a couple years ago, I think it was 2 years ago, and I was working in a different industry, kind of. I was at a restaurant technology conference, and the guest speaker was Billy Beane. So my Moneyball made
circle.
It full circle, yeah. And that was a really cool experience as well. But I say all that maybe to say that like I put a lot of stock into that concept of like how to value players in a way that's maybe different than, you know, just batting average or just, you know, free throw shooting or just, you know, different kind of stats. And I think it's an interesting track on Isaac Paredes versus Bregman, where those stats line up compared to what each player is making. If you need to like something to make you sleep at night, that Bregman got away, right? If we were spending $40 million on him, we're not having, you know, we don't have money to maybe exercise it somewhere else.
Sure.
Maybe Jordan doesn't get an extension. Maybe something else. Well, maybe Hunter Brown doesn't get an extension.
I think that $30 million actually went to Hader this year. So.
Well, I mean, Hader was already under contract. By the way, he's been lights out. That money seemed kind of silly, $100 million for him. But you know, man, you got a lockdown guy. Him and Brian Abreu really are back at the bullpen lockdown for the last couple of weeks.
There's something about two fireballers that you got, 97, 98, 900, and it comes from both sides, right-hand, left-handed, and neither one of them is afraid. Like, it's not their only pitch. They have a two and a four-seamer. Then they'll hit you with the slider and fucking just something off. Like, they'll pull the string on it on you.
Yeah. But that's a really good 8-9 right now. Speaking of the closer just – or setup man closer just popped in my head. Did you hear about Octavio Dotel?
He died.
Yeah, he passed away.
Roof collapse.
Yeah, in a club accident. I think in Dominican maybe.
I didn't dive into any details. I just – because his name stood out, whatever, but they said there was like 100-something people died, and it was just – It was. I was like, yeah, it sounds one terrible
my,
all around.
One of my favorite players, Octavio Dotel.
I don't recall him honestly.
Is that right? He was. He was a closer for a while, and then when Wagner was here, it was him. He was the 8-9 guy. So that's kind of the He was electric. He had this kind of really. Remember Christian Javier kind of reminds me a little bit.
Okay.
Dotel's a little more flamboyant, just like sidearm angle, fireballer, a lot of whip on the ball. Just a I don't know, heck of an out. The trivia question, though, and nobody believes me. Everybody makes me look it up, but Octavio Dotel is the answer to the question of who threw out the first pitch at – it was Enron Field at the time for the Astros in the first game. Yeah, they played next exhibition game, I think, against the Yankees, and I think Nolan Ryan threw out the ceremonial, but Octavio Dotel back then was a starting pitcher before he moved to the bullpen. That's your trivia for the day. Nobody believes me in that, by the way.
Listen, hold on. I believe you just because – I mean – you could be wrong, but the way you rattled it, the conviction you gave me, I'm good.
The funny thing is, when somebody told me that, by the way, I was like, nope. Octavio Dotel was a seventh man. Thank you very much. And they were like, look it up, bitch. And I looked it up, and I went, all right.
You know what came to mind when you said that is there was a pre-shift, I don't know, a month or so back, and we were discussing Michelin star rating and the Guinness Book of World Records. And I told Esther, I said to whoever else was there, I was like, you understand the Michelin star rating? Michelin is the tire company. Yep. The star rating is based on how far you should be willing to drive. And I got like a bunch of looks of like, no way. I'm like, I promise you, I know random shit, and this is one of those random things. Also, and the Guinness Book of World Records is the same Guinness beer company. Again, they were like, what? Yep. I said, look them up.
There you go.
Somebody went and looked, and I'm like, I'm not making that up. That's just that random shit.
There's another one in there. The percent rain. This is new for me, by the way. Percent chance of rain. It's the actual area that's going to happen.
That represents the percentage of the city.
I was watching news the other day. I was actually watching news broadcast of the day. And the way they say it is misleading. They should be a little more accurate.
I only learned that within the last, I'd say, 18 months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe a couple of years for me. But, yeah, same thing. It's like what? Hold on. 30% means 30% of the viewing area is going to get rain. I thought it meant that was the chance.
The chance for the day for everyone.
Yeah. Nope. Nope, that's not what I mean. So, like, why say percent chance of rain? Why not say
the city has a 30%
coverage
chance.
Area? Is 30, you know what I'm saying? Why not represent that in a different way? Which kind of seems misleading. That being said, that's one of those funny things. Funny trivia. We'll give all the trivia answers in the podcast too. So listen, and you will crush your local trivia. Which I think you've had a couple wins.
Yeah, we have. We do pretty well.
I never join. I should, by the way.
Well, and now Thursday nights are a normal work night for me. So
that's fair. Yeah. If they ever have an answer, a question about in-run field and first pitch, Octavio Dotel is the answer. That being said, let's go. Anything else on sports? I have an interesting sports kind of video.
There's nothing for the Texans right now. We got Rockets on Astros.
Check this out.
Check
this out real quick, by the way. Let me see if I can get this pulled up. This is a video of what looks like two exact plays, right? Pitch off, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, if you take a look here, my friend, look at what's going on right here. Same score. This is the exact same game. This is the same. This is like, this is presented to me as this is the Matrix glitching. It's the exact same play, back-to-back innings or the same inning maybe, top of the fourth,
bottom of the fourth.
Same
yeah.
score, same, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And again, we'll watch it one more time. It is basically, I'll describe what's going on. It's two pitchers.
So it's the top of the inning, bottom of the inning, same game. Yeah.
And it's a bit of a curveball that's grounded to the third baseman, bounces off the third baseman's glove, which is kind of rare.
Was that third base or shortstop that it bounced off?
It bounced off the third baseman. The shortstop catches it midair and throws the guy out at first. Both plays are almost exactly the same. They're top to bottom.
Mm-hmm.
This was presented as a glitch in the Matrix, right? But this is the same inning. Nick, same inning. This happened top inning, bottom inning.
Yeah.
It's absolutely bonkers. Absolutely.
No, I hadn't seen that. That's
absolutely
fun.
Bonkers. Anyways, anything else on sports? You want to take a break?
Let's take a break.
All right. Give me just a second. Let's take a break.
And now we got a fresh beverage back here, ready to rock and roll. Rockets are up 8 in the second quarter. Astros won again. Liking it.
Hey-o.
So, last time we were on the podcast, we were talking about the book Chaos, and I'm a chapter and a half from done. But I want to talk about that. But I want to dive into first. Nicole and I have been streaming the shit out of Dexter. So we're on season 7 of 8, and we have 2 episodes left in season 7. And the other night I was talking to Rob. And he asked me who was the main bad guy, main antagonist, protagonist, whichever word it is.
Antagonist.
There you go.
To this season,
to,
right?
For the season. Because each season, yeah. there's a theme. There's a serial killer that is central to, if there's 12 episodes, they represent at least 8 or 10 of them.
Not that anybody doesn't know what Dexter is or the premise, but the idea is that he is a serial killer that serial kills. Serial killers,
he
right?
He kills killers. He kills people that, according to a code who have to meet certain markers and measures.
The idea is these are bad guys, right?
He vets them first, yes.
He's otherwise catching and disposing or handling or whatever bad guys,
lots
right?
Lots would say, yeah, he's a vigilante for sure.
That's what I called it, vigilanteism. Yeah. I think that's what this is. And so
So this season he asked who was the main bad guy. And I said central to it. Honestly, it's Dexter. The battle this year is Dexter because there's been – let's say there's 10 or 12 episodes. We're 10 in. In the 10 episodes we've watched, we've had one guy that was, start to be the serial killer for 2 episodes. And then there's one for 3. And then there was one for 2. And another for 3. And now, like, the central, though, this season has been, I was telling you off air for a second, we're making a drink, was it's Dexter.
Yeah.
This year, he's both his dark and his light. And they've used not just beautiful cinematography and imagery with a lot of lights, dark shadows, different colors, but In the actual words, the script of it this year, the actual their script has been so good, where throughout the season and even this last episode today, there was a couple of points where Dexter and his sister Deb are talking to his teenage daughter about smoking weed, but what they say to the daughter is what they actually need or mean to say to each other about the fight they had earlier in the day.
Interesting.
There's a lot of that going on throughout, not just this episode, but this season, including with the light, the dark, the shadows, the characters, the overlap, the intertwining of all the stories that are such short minionettes, if you will, of this year. It's a menagerie of all Dexter, kind of spider web.
Minionette and menagerie.
Yeah, dude, I'm telling you, I'm digging the shit out of this because they've done such beautiful work. I understand. Here's what I was saying. I understand why season over season, it was up against Breaking Bad. And I still also understand why it lost to Breaking Bad.
Okay, what do you think that? Why do you think that?
Dude, this is good, but Breaking Bad was still better.
How?
But this is fucking good.
But how, though? What was better?
I honestly feel like there was better cinematography. There was better, just a tick better acting in Breaking Bad. There's an intensity that it's not that I haven't felt from Dexter, but from both Aaron Paul and, Jesus Christ, what's
Cranston,
his name? Bryan Cranston, yeah.
I read his autobiography, by the way.
Both of them, like, there was just something about both of them in Breaking Bad that I've never seen them do.
Yeah.
And it's not that Michael C. Hall hasn't done an amazing job. It's just not quite
I wonder if, you never got into Dexter necessarily, but, like, the concept is interesting. And, I didn't tell you about this. I want to talk about another book that I just finished. It's kind of in the same category in kind of sort of, but to me, Dexter, like, I always struggle with that vigilante aspect. You know what I mean? It's like,
2 seconds this way, just for the reference, but the previous, the last episode of Dexter was called Helter Skelter.
That's, we'll by go. The way, you want to hear something interesting? Katy Perry bought the house next door to, I think,
LaBianca house. Perfect.
Yeah, it was and by the way, that Blue Origin thing, just to, by the way, because this is in my head right now, I gotta get it out. She bought the house next to it, and it was owned by some nuns, and apparently the nuns didn't want to sell it, and one of the nuns died in the process of her going to court trying to sell it.
Happened to have a heart attack,
something like that. Anyways,
In Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Tarantino, it's this telling of Helter Skelter, but it's because they end up the wrong house, why the story's different. The house next door is owned by the stuntman in the fucking movie, the one I think she bought. Anyway, it's beautiful.
So back to Dexter with regard to vigilante. That concept kind of bothered me, and so I kind of want to understand that, because okay, back to the comparison to Breaking Bad, I think that there's an element of there's an element of some of the best. It's typically long drawn out form shows, not movies, but this idea of the anti-hero, right? We saw this in The Sopranos. I think this is Dexter. This is all. Then this is idea that
the main protagonist, they're all anti-hero.
That's a cinematographical concept introduced in modern cinema, if you will.
Okay.
Portrayed through like long form TV shows. Again, Sopranos was that, right? This is a bad guy who we all root for, okay?
Sure.
Dexter is a bad guy we all root for. Breaking Bad, I mean, these are bad guys that we root for, right? And so even The Sopranos, he does kill people, but something about Dexter and that kind of, like, because the way you're supposed to buy into this anti-hero is that he's otherwise balancing the field, right? These are bad guys that deserve to be taken out, and he's just doing the bidding.
Dexter,
for
he also vets all of them. He has a certain code. Like, he does, they have right, to be killers. They have to do these things that are egregious and meet certain criteria.
Right, and I get all that.
Now,
but
I was just saying, there have been two times in the seven seasons, right, that he actually killed somebody that was didn't meet it, right? Two
and
times.
That's the thing about vigilantism. It's like,
ooh, as I said, up until last episode, there was two more. Now it's four people.
Yeah, so there you go. So the vigilantism, when it breaks down from like, these guys deserve it by way of, you know, I'm doing the world a favor, to like, well, this is just convenient for me, right? That's slippery slope, that thin line, to me is why I think this concept is interesting, right? Like, I can't quite buy into the character of Dexter because I just can't get all the way into that he's doing good for,
fair,
you know, right?
So if I want to tell you a little bit about the episode today, how's this one ended up. There's we've been dealing with this Ukrainian mafia throughout the season, and for the longest time you thought this guy Victor that Dexter killed, who killed a cop, then you thought that Victor was this guy Isaacs, is either their son or something like that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until this last episode where Dexter follows him into a bar and he says, you wouldn't, you know, anyways, he looks around and he said, you didn't think your enemies would follow you into a gay bar. Mm-hmm. He said, I don't think anybody would know. That's when that was the actual connection the whole mm-hmm. time. But it's one of the layers of the subtlety of the spiderweb thing I'm talking about this year, where,
yeah,
because right before that, like 10 minutes at best, Dexter's having a conversation with himself about how him and this guy Isaac are the same person. And it's not that Dexter's gay, but it's about hiding things in plain sight.
Oh, the parallel of two lives or some kind of...
Isaac also explains to Victor, or to Dexter, why Victor was so important to him. He tells him, he said, with Victor made me feel alive. Mm. And Dexter ends up telling his girl Hannah this, because she's in the part of the season. He tells her, she makes him feel safe. But it was, there's the parallels, overlaps. There's a ton of that this season.
Yeah.
It's character development, depth, lots of use of just beautiful actual, you know, script. But, man, the cinematography this year, they've had some of the best I've seen. Not just this season, but in the show, but overall, like this season, it's pretty interesting how they've done this, and I'm loving it. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Then when the Helter Skelter, though, I was like, dude, that's
you know, the universe is always presenting ideas to us. You know, I think that the book, let me get back on the book Chaos for a second. I know you're almost finished. I'm rereading it, I think, for the third time. Where you are in the book now. Is there like a big, you know, let me kind of see if I can ask a question that I find interesting. When we first started this journey of the book, right, you had an in-depth, I would call, understanding of the mainstream narrative by way of reading the book Helter Skelter, right? So like for example, if someone would say...
Yes, I had that plus, but yes.
Right,
yeah,
so when people talk about this episode, right, it's the Manson murders, typically that's how it is often called by people who don't, you know,
sure, the Manson or the Manson family,
and so, and then, you know, you might call it the LaBianca Tate murders,
LaBianca murders,
so, you know what I'm saying, so that is like a depth below just like what you hear on the news, right, when you read the book. But the book is written by someone who wrote it in a way, as you now go through this book, this seems like, you know, was written again. Not that it doesn't have truth in it, but it was written in a way to present the story in a way that was...
Some would call it a narrative. The reason I call it a narrative, because a narrative to me means it's just short of propaganda and rhetoric.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a narrative. It's not devoid of some of the facts from both sides of the line, if you will, but it is telling a story from a fucking perspective I want this story told from.
Yeah, like Michael Malice says that, like, once you get to the point where you understand that everything you that is presented to you is a carefully crafted narrative, like, you can kindly like remove the scales from your eyes. And I think this is another example. To me, that was an example of that. Is like, you know, the mainstream narrative about this. I mean, I was talking to some people today about they were talking about, did you watch the Oklahoma City bombing document on Netflix? And I go,
no,
oh,
I've seen it.
Well,
oh,
not
I saw
you.
It there,
no,
but
I'm saying today somebody was talking about that, and I go, oh, what did they say happened? You know what I mean? And it's like, that's interesting because it's Netflix and so on and so forth. So I'm kind of like, but I don't want to dig into that too much.
Yeah,
but the idea is that, like, you know, there's stories of what we know, and there's the mainstream narrative and what the news presented and how they present it. And then there's like, if you dig just a little bit, there's that. Then if you dig a lot, it's like, oh, wow, that might have happened, right? And so I think that to me was what this Chaos book really did. It was like, man, and you and I have talked about this off Mike as well as a little bit on Mike, but the way the author presents the story, it just fits me so much, because it's just like, I was asking this, and then I said this, well, and if that's, you know, this, then that means this, and if that means this, this, that, and this, and this, you know what I mean?
11 and a half chapters in, and I'm loving, because I think what I heard you say, and I agree with, is this. Yes, he started out trying to write a piece to tell a story about it, and just wanted to get some more information, give something new if he could, but just get some information, yep. Right? Ask some questions there. And as he asked questions, these questions weren't answered, or some were deliberately answered in a way that made no sense. Like, he didn't get here because he was trying to find dirt.
Right.
He got here organically, in my opinion, because he'd asked a question, and it was answered in a manner that led us here, and over and over. And it was then when we get to the fun part, where we start diving into not just court records, but probation records. And this, I mean, it has to move beyond just like fucking error. There's, like we said last time, protected on high somewhere. There's something else larger afoot here, because you, me, and Joe Blow, that are, if this was us on whatever probation, we don't walk like this. And whatever the actual official narrative is of what happened in that scenario, why he, you know, got arrested here for possession and underage girls and drugs and stuff, and you're, that,
yeah, yeah.
Point all is, those questions. Too many, it's just question after question after question, and it keeps going, and he's not, what I feel and loves is not, he didn't come here to try and start shit, and he's not actually digging to start shit. It's just asking questions, because each time he gets an answer,
it's kind of like
he gets part of an answer, and then there's 17 more questions.
Yeah, it's like, hold on. If that means that, then that means what this guy said here couldn't be true. Or that means they knew about this at this point. Then why didn't they do this?
I love that he goes back and says, hey, on this day you said this. And the guy's like, yeah, you know what? Because he said, hey, you remember you said this? No, I never said that. Here, at this day, on this time, here's court record where you said this under oath. Oh, well, I guess I did. I'd have no recollection of that.
Yeah,
it's like, wait, what? So I don't know anything about that. Sorry, I can't help you. What? Like, how's that possible? Like, and also, I believe this person. It's part of that brainwashing. It's part of that MK Ultra. It's part of the program. It's part of all the stuff that this, I think this guy presents without trying to actually present it from a fucking conspiracy theory angle. I don't think that chaos was written with the intent, or even came from a point of, hey, here's my crazy wild theory. What was really going on? And let me prove it. I think it went the other way. It was, I'm just going to ask some questions, and it got all the way to this other end. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I didn't start trying to prove this. There's no, again, by way of narrative in that conversation or that context we're talking about, like, his narrative is just, I was curious about, and I just kept these questions, and he, you know, God bless him, he had enough journalistic integrity to go, you know, I can't let that little thing, you know, I guess go unanswered or unquestioned, I guess, you know.
And just continuing to, you know what, if this... What I believe he did was what I would qualify is the scientific method, asking questions
there
or whatever. Just asking questions, continue to ask questions. Whatever the answers are, you accept them and continue to ask questions.
Until you get a banner answer, you
can. But because there is, like, again, it's just keep digging, because you can't just say, oh, this is it, I got the answer.
Have you, I mean, I'm sure you're getting kind of to the late part. You talked about MK Ultra, CIA. Have you kind of unpacked your thought around that involvement at all, or like your understanding through the book about what who could have been involved?
Well, we've talked about it at length before this, sure. And tell you what, as that chapter was being read today, where my mind went through was that experiment. Mm. In the book, they keep talking about it on smaller scales. Mm. And how about this? COVID. During COVID, I'm going to use my son as an example. And with what we saw on every channel, and we saw before that, not too long before that, on every news station, where they were reading the same goddamn script across the entire country, and how why it's called programming, and propaganda, and how to control people, right? Whether it's hallucinogenics or simple things like fluoride, which will fuck with the pineal gland and the third eye. You know what I'm talking about? Like, expanding this CIA mind control experiment from just small control to a much more grandiose, and talking about how do you make this work? Well, you get a larger group that's under, like, you have to have mental and emotional problems.
Nick, it's the
money
ball of mind manipulation,
yes,
bro.
There
that's
you
what
go.
It is.
You're here.
Hey, check this out. Have you seen this clip of Bill Murray on Joe Rogan? Hang on. No, I guess not.
I have not. No, push play.
I'll try.
And I read Wired, the book written by, what's his name, Woodward, about Belushi. I read like 5 pages of Wired, and I went, oh my God. They framed Nixon. like, all of a sudden I went, oh my God, if this is what he writes about my friend that I've known, you know, for my, you know, half of my adult life, which is completely inaccurate, talking to like the people of the outer circle getting the story. What the hell could they have done to Nixon? I just felt like if he did this to my friend like this, and I acknowledge I only read 5 pages, but the 5 pages I read, you know, made me want to like set fire to the whole thing.
Jamie, see if you can
those
find
those 5
that.
Pages, I went, if he did this to Belushi, what he did to Nixon is probably soiled for me too. I can't take it. And I know you say, well, you could have two sources and everything like that, but the two sources that he had, if he had them for the Wired book, were so far outside the inner circle that it was criminal.
So what he goes on to talk about was, and I haven't seen the whole
what's
thing.
What's he talking about with Belushi there?
So the what he's talking about is like, I think Jim Belushi wasn't this drug.
John Belushi.
I'm sorry.
John Belushi.
John Belushi, the one that died, right? The Blues Brothers. What he goes on to talk about is that he wasn't this drug-crazed animal that overdosed. Like, he didn't do drugs very much, if not at all. Like, this may have been the first time he ever did a speedball, right? And so that's a narrative-flipping thing. Bill Murray's like, this is what he's saying is my best friend. Like, I would have known this guy was doing this, right? Again, I'm speculating from what I understand. But what he actually said there was that I read this book that Bob Woodward wrote about my friend in a way that this is impossible that he did that.
This is a story five pages
in. And this is the guy that otherwise, you know, was involved
Nixon.
In that.
Yeah, Woodward,
in that,
Burns,
yeah,
and Nixon. Yeah.
There you go,
yeah,
right? And so, like, his extrapolation is, if they lied about this, they'll lie about any, like, this is not even important.
Right.
You know
this
what
is
mean?
A fun one, too. Like, this
yeah,
is,
yeah, so, man. Like, again, we talk about narrative crafting. That, to me, was a really interesting, no, yeah,
like
really
that,
interesting
yeah.
takeaway. And, you know, let me, hold on 1 second. I'll tie this into a book that I just got done reading called Dr. Satan. And this book is quite interesting.
Is it about Anthony Fauci?
But it's not actually. His name is Marcel Peetiot. I got you.
We need to have that as a sounder, by the way. Sure.
I have it, by the way. I'll see if I can. I've got something here.
Keep going. Marcel Satan see. Book.
Nope, that's not it.
That was definitely not it.
That's not a rim shot at all. that actually should be the sounder for this story. So this doctor is probably mentally ill from early on, but. He becomes a doctor in France, and this guy kind of existed in World War II, World War I times. He fought in World War I. Anyways, the real story is about World War II. So in World War II, when France was occupied by the Nazis, this guy set up an opposed, apparent spy network where he would, for a fee, smuggle, you know, undesirables. You know, the Nazis round up Jews, so on and so forth. So people would come to him to help get smuggled out of the country. And this guy basically would take their money. Thank you for paying me to get you out of the country. Ready to go? You got all your life's possessions ready to go because you're gonna need this in your new place. Great. And you say, okay, I'm gonna give you some inoculations, you know, because you're moving to Argentina and kill them basically, right?
Yeah.
Steal all their money, so on and so forth. Okay, so this goes on, and this is like a bonkers story, right? Like this guy, I mean, that's just a crazy story to begin with. He gets away. I mean, hundreds of people die. I think he got convicted of like 100 murders, right?
That sounds like Kevorkian, but euthanasia,
bro,
even bigger, better,
bro.
Bigger, better, faster.
So they're unpacking. He claims that he's part of these spy networks, so on and so forth. And, like, there's some evidence maybe. And so they're unpacking it after the story. Like, did he work for the Nazis at some point? You know, was he part of that kind of thing? Was he actually working for the French spy network? And then they find some papers in Virginia, of all places. And guess who was funding part of his operation? The OSS, the precursor to the CIA, was quite literally part of the funding for Dr. Satan. And it's just one of those things. It's like, of fucking course, right? Of course. Of course it is. You know what I mean? Of course. And now, of course, the book will tell you that they didn't have any idea what he's doing. And maybe they didn't. But it's just another one of those things. It's like, is American intelligence, God bless those people, like, do they have their fingers in everything?
I was
going to
say,
what
I'd like to add here right now for a moment, folks, is that this is an op-ed from Joshua Schatzer. This is in no way Josh Schatzer does reflect the opinions of TadasTadas.com or Nick Perez. This is solely of Joshua Craig.
Oh, this is a book
Schatzer.
I read. This is nothing. These are my thoughts.
Ah, fair
my
you go.
Thoughts.
There
yeah,
you go.
This is a book
good,
I read
good, good.
That projected
because
we
love the CIA.
We do love.
We love the Clintons. We love... The Bushes.
I'd vote for Hillary right now if I could. If they let me vote for her, I'd vote for her.
Three times.
Anyways, that like I'm reading this book, and the book is just like bonkers with regard to like, you know, like morality. You know what I mean? And in the trial, you know, he's saying that he was he was taking out non-desirables himself. You know, that's what his claim was too. And this we kind of go back to that Dexter morality and vigilante thing. Well, and this guy.
Well, so earlier off air we were talking. You asked me. I thought you were starting to ask. It was like, where do I draw the line as far as like. Like feeling of I don't know. I'm good with what Dexter and how he does, but like, where's my line? Is that what you're kind of asking?
Well, I mean, I mean,
just in general,
I think
conversation.
To me, it's not necessarily about where your line is. To me, it's just the concept of like how about this?
Well, what is justice? Maybe.
Yeah. Like, and like, what are you like? How about this? Like if you had some kind of superpower where you could, like, you know, I don't know, what's the word where you just pop into another place, like.
Teleport
into somewhere, right? And the most evil people you can imagine on the face of the earth, right? Maybe they're politicians, maybe they're not, right? You know what I'm saying? And you could teleport yourself into their presence and assassinate them. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And it's like, okay,
like the movie Jumper, I could go wherever I want.
Fine. Right. Yeah. And you think about that, and it's like, okay, is the world better served for these people to be assassinated? You know, there's a good argument for that, but like, who draws a line on who should be assassinated? Well,
and why
should
I get to be Judge Judy?
I would say
Judge Judy, an executioner.
I like that, by the way. The title of this podcast is Judge Judy and Executioner. But that to me is like something I think about. Like, okay, man, I think about some evil people out there, right? Maybe another thought exercise is like, if you can go back in time and kill baby Hitler, it's like, you know what I mean? Would you do it? Right? It's like, well, of course
sure.
you would. It's like, hold on,
yeah,
you
yeah.
can kill a baby? Well, he's gonna be Hitler. It's like, well, he's a baby,
right?
Right?
Or
he's not Hitler.
Couldn't you kill somebody else? That would have helped alter that too, et cetera. All that concept, right?
Yeah, like, where do you draw the line? Can you kill a baby in order to, you know?
Well, just in general, like, where, again, if I, can I be the moral judge for anyone and everyone? And so with Dexter, again, like, so my answer choice.
You said can I, and I think the question should be should I?
Hold on, I'm going to go with this. Can I? I think somewhere there's a net could, this Nick right here, maybe, I'm not sure, maybe that's crawfishing on it. Should I? No.
Yeah.
No, I should not.
Yeah.
That's an honest answer.
Yeah.
As far as like Dexter, I make peace with the understanding, like, he has a code and it has been violated at different points. However, also my identifying with it and appreciating it. There's a lot of times, again, I'm saying literally I will say out loud a response to whatever their dialogue is. And it's exactly what the script has gone back and forth. Like, I'm just connecting with the show on a lot of levels.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you
there.
I
dig it. And, like, the concept of vigilante, it goes, like, this year also, his sister, you know, she didn't like the justice of certain incident, but she also realized that if she'd actually let him do his thing, then this other girl wouldn't have died, and she wouldn't have almost died. And so while she hates it, like, she literally said, I don't like what you do. I understand it, but I can't support it.
Yeah. Condone it.
Yeah. It's all of that. It's like, and so that's part of this spider web this year. It's there's so much in that I identify with.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, vigilante again,
to me, the biggest takeaway from that show is that thought exercise.
Like, capital punishment. I'm for it, but I like how we've discussed it to the point. I think the proper application of any kind of actual restitutions and or punishment, right? So if according to the law, you say you killed my family member, I get to decide.
Yeah.
Like, I can up to killing you.
Yeah.
And you've been sentenced to, you know, death, but I'm the one that gets to decide, and I get to push the button or I don't, right? If I don't, I get to choose what's actual justice and restitution.
Well,
what
you're saying is that, like, the victim oftentimes is like outside of the equation with regard to like who is, you know, Who's made whole?
Right. Yeah, the restitution is supposed to be, like, you get paid money back.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's.
You have a loved one that died and you get, you know, 50 grand. How do you feel about that? I feel like, fuck you. Like.
Yeah. It's hilarious. Do you know the website or the chat form 4chan? Have you heard about this before?
I didn't know, sir.
Okay. 4chan is like this infamous place where, I don't know, it's like the gnarly side of, I've never been there before, but like, it is supposedly where racists go to live and so on and so forth.
The racists go to racist fun,
yeah,
freely?
It's the space, you know what I mean, whatever.
They go to racist freely. I got you. I like
so
it.
Check this out. This is a hilarious story. So they got hacked. 4chan got hacked. And they've been hacked for whatever, so on and so forth, like a day. And so there's a lot of things going on with the hack. I don't know much about it, but the funniest thing that came out of it was somebody went and looked up where the comments were coming from. And this is like a very, like, it's known to be anti-Semitic, right? This is a known anti-Semitic spot.
Sure.
Right. 70% of the comments on 4chan come from Israel. So the like a place where people would say this is the bastion of anti-Semitism, that place, 70% of the people commenting come from Israel.
Like 70% of the anti-Semitic comments are coming from Israel?
It doesn't attach the comments to the number. I'm just saying the participants on this site, 70% of them are geolocated in Israel.
Okay.
Right? And so...
For a site that is notoriously anti-Semitic?
Correct. Okay. Correct. And so...
So what's your extrapolation
from that? Their extrapolation from that is that anti-Semitism is only driven by Jews who are otherwise using the concept of anti-Semitism to otherwise something.
To weaponize it.
Drive a narrative, drive so on and so forth, right? Sure. It's another thing that, you know, like this idea that, like, racism only exists on social media. You know what I mean? I know that's not true, but, like, this concept of, like, you know, if you just live your life on social media.
I see the parallel.
You would think that this is the most racist country ever, right? If you lived your life on 4chan, you would think that that's the most anti-Semitic place ever. And then you find out that, like, what, 70% of the people. Okay, so what does that mean? Is it 30% of the people are posting all that? What are the other 70% doing there? I don't know what it is. It's just a funny kind of thing. To me,
I tell you where my mind went with that. The movie Private Parts, Howard Stern, when they analyzed the numbers when he first went to New York, the people that listened, that, you know, the ones that loved him, they would listen for, you know, 3 hours, whatever. Number one reason why is they want to see what he say next. The ones that hate him, they would listen for 5 hours because they wanted to see what he would say next. Possibly that those, the 70% of the traffic to the website is there because they're trying to monitor and see what these people say. Like, does that make sense?
I understand.
I'm just saying that my mind went there.
I'm not dismissing that as an option. I just think it's funny that this place is supposed to be so anti-Semitic is also heavily, like, the people posting there from this one place, which you would figure you know what I mean? That's just, to me, it's an interesting kind of,
I said the interest, like, they're posting there. Okay, well, that doesn't mean that they could be responding, and that's a post.
I get it, but
I'm not dismissing what you're saying. I got you.
It's a funny.
It's a factoid.
Here's another example of that. It's like, you know, if we were to tabulate all the all the people who are arrested for keying Teslas with swastikas, right? They're all, like, leftists. You know what I'm saying? It's all people that, like, it's the people who are drawing swastikas are, like, drawing it on Teslas because they think people that own them are swastikas. The people who own Teslas are so not Nazis that they, like, they have no interest in showing it. You know what I'm saying? It's like the only time we ever see a swastika is from a left winger who is, like, trying to say that, look at all the Nazis around. It's like, you're the only one using the swastika. You're the only one.
What I hear you saying there is the big Jay Okerson one where he was telling us to depart. Dude, we just had 3-3 back and forth. 3-point shooting contest. Sorry, guys. I'm watching the game. What are you talking about? The swastika Nazi thing, when I go back to when we watched Big Jay Okerson, Dog Belly, where he was telling a story about whatever heckling lady, you know, from the audience and, you know, saying that he's she was a Nazi when he was telling, like, he's Jewish, of Jewish descent and anti-Semitic jokes, but she's like, you're a Nazi. He's like, literally, that's the one and only thing that I'm not allowed.
Yeah.
Like, the Nazis are not Jewish. Like, that's
yeah. It's I got one kind of out card here. You know what I mean? It's
and she was like, "Oh, you think that's the reason you could say it?"
Exactly. It's like, yeah, I know. Kind of.
Exactly. Why? Yeah. Yeah. It's so stupid.
Have you ever heard of this band called The Who?
Never in my life.
The Who. The Who.
Come on, that's
was notorious for being rowdy rock and rollers back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, right? And they actually, I think it's Ringo Starr's son is their drummer, maybe? And they've kicked him out of the band because he was drumming too hard, apparently, playing music too loud. It's a kind of a funny way to represent it, but apparently they called it overplaying. They fired their longtime drummer for overplaying. And the comment from, I forget the lead singer's name, was something like, I can't even hear myself think, it's too loud.
Perfect.
That's what the world is today.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Rock and roll bands are like, turn that music down.
Well, The Who's probably 85.
I know. It's hilarious.
Listen, as you say that, my mind goes to it's the Cameron Crowe movie with Almost Famous, and it's a quasi biopic for him because he did do that as a young kid in high school.
Oh yeah.
And on there early on, Philip Seymour Hoffman, it's Jimmy Fallon's character early on when he's trying to become their new manager, and he says, "Look at the Rolling Stones." He said, "Do you think fucking Mick Jagger's gonna be out there, fucking moving and grooving, trying to sing and jive when he's 65? Not a chance." Yeah, and that's like the hilarious. Ha 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 ha! You're right. No, not a chance. No, he was rocking it at 65.
God bless him. Let's
play
do,
it. Play it.
Well, hold on. Let's do Blue Origin, and then we'll finish with Bambalam.
We
talked briefly about this, and I'm so curious about everybody's thoughts. But I think it's called Blue Origin. Blue Origin.
I just
is
keep wanting
a,
to call it Blue October, which is a band. But
I like that too. You know, I think they're from Houston. Blue October, or they have ties to Houston. But Blue Origin is a Bezos company that is, it's called Space Tourism, and there were
and then it has Josh's favorite female artist of all time,
like
Katy Perry.
Why you say it like that? That's
just Flo, to make a joke.
I think Flo's probably favorite.
No, he likes T. Sweezy.
That's
Sweezy. He likes blonde haired little boy.
So I think it's five women. I forget the other three women, but Gail whatever her
Gail Weatherstorm, Gail Hailstorm from Scary Movie. No, it's I don't. It doesn't matter them. Those
it's
ladies.
Oprah's gal pal Gayle.
That one.
Katy
yep.
Perry and other.
It's not
members.
Oprah. Katy Perry and
went
three other ladies.
Up and what's hilarious is the commentary about the whole thing is like, this looks fake AF. Like it, none of it looks real. There's a whole point where the way it landed looked fake. They had a whole scene where Jeff Bezos was going to open the door, and they opened the door too early from the inside, and it's supposed to be only open from the outside. People are speculating there's no scorch marks on the capsule. This looks baloney, but. Whether it happened or not, that's not really the interesting part to me. I think the interesting part to me, and we're talking a little bit off air, is the idea that in the time and place we are now, right, with people complaining about the price of eggs, tariffs, so on and so forth, that these goofballs decided it was a good marketing ploy to send a bunch of like
billionaires,
vapid women up in a space thing, and
to try to advertise for billionaire tourism, space tourism,
like,
if you will.
And I think the idea was like we're supposed to act like they're important enough that we care about. This, you know what I mean? It's like, look at us. We're the five women. They called them astronauts. They were in space.
When
for
I saw the meme,
the
that was the joke
was
the ones that got stuck on the ISS for 9 months,
right?
Looking at these ladies
Side-eyeing
also being,
them.
being called astronauts,
right? Like the astronauts were considered like the best of the best from our military once upon a time, right? These are the creme de la creme. And now Katy Perry, you know, sings a song about kissing a girl, and she.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, by the way, Felix Baumgartner, it was a handful of years back. He did the Red Bull Stratosphere leap. He went up in a fucking balloon, just above the stratosphere.
He jumped. I remember that.
And he free fell for like 3.5 minutes or some shit. And you can watch the whole video. And there's a point in this video, maybe actually it's probably more like 7 minutes of falling. There's a period where it's at least 90 seconds. He's completely unconscious because he's in a flat spin.
Really? I don't remember that part.
And it's so on that song Yellow Wolf and fucking Paul Wall Hustle, at the very, very end of it, they have that on there. And I've always loved it in my recording of it because you can hear him. He says, he said, I'm going over, and he jumps. And then this dude, and you can watch the video, and I think he actually went higher than they did in Blue October.
Yeah, maybe so. And it's so silly.
He went above the stratosphere line and then jumped.
To me,
so he went just like, let's say he went 10 feet into space, but he jumped.
It's so
like, he broke the line, though.
It's so silly that like they expect us to like consider this impressive. Like now she's
I was
like
say,
these
just
people,
care
because
I don't care.
These people are astronauts now. Get out of town, man. Get out of town. All right, last before we get out of here. Here is I just thought this was hilarious.
Ambulam, where the ambulam? Why the man body still
the
right there?
Supposed to be laying
call
there.
The damn ambulam.
How we call it? Ambulam.
Nick, as we wrap this thing up, my friend. What are we going to do on the next podcast?
Well, we got to wait for this to go to the end. I know. This is not the appropriate song to go out on.
I got you, man. What are we going to do on the next podcast, my friend?
Joshua Craig, I need the right music.
How would you feel about a 40-year-old guy?
See, he broke it. There we go. The next podcast, Joshua, we're going to do the same thing we do every time.
I think I like this rhythm we got going on, my man. It is great. And what is it that we're going to do, my friend?
Same thing we do every time.
Try and take over the world. Boom.
Your Highness, Secretary General, Your Majesties, Your Royal Highnesses, Presidents, Prime Ministers, Ministers, ladies and gentlemen.